Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. You know, they say marriage is an adventure. And for our first guest today, it certainly has been. On the phone with me today, Jill Piazza. She is the author of the new book, How to Be Married, What I Learned from Real Women on Five Continents About Surviving My First Really Hard Year of Marriage. Jo's an award-winning journalist, editor, digital content strategist, and author, co-author of the international bestseller, The Knockoff, and she is also the author of the critically acclaimed If Nuns Ruled the World and Celebrity Inc., How Famous People Make Money. Going to be talking with her about her journey that she and her husband Nick took during their first year of marriage, both physically and emotionally. And it's going to be interesting and a lot of fun, I think. And I hope you'll join in. What do you think is the key to a good marriage? We'd love to hear from you. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you about what works and maybe what was some bad advice that you got along the way. Joe Piazza, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to hear everyone else's advice because I wrote the book because I had no idea what I was doing when I got married, and I'm still trying to figure it out. So starting the conversation was part of the reason that I ended up writing this in the first place.
Well, Ed, I tell you what, I really enjoyed it. You're a great writer. You write with a lot of humor.
And thank you.
It was fun to read, and Jill Nadeau, my producer, really enjoyed it as well. She listened to you read it.
I read the audiobook, which was a first for me. And it was emotional because I was talking about my own first year of marriage. I wrote and reported the book in real time. So it was quick. I wanted it to feel like the reader was experiencing those first 12 months with me. But reading the audiobook and reliving it so quickly was incredibly emotional.
I bet it was. And, you know, you got this great husband, Nick, and he's from Milwaukee. Family is. Did he grow up in Wisconsin?
Yeah, he grew up in Milwaukee. So if anyone has any very specific advice for me on how to be married to someone from Milwaukee, I'll take it.
Yeah,
I'm excited to hear that.
He strikes me as being a good Midwestern guy.
That's exactly what he is. My agent and editor's only complaint when I handed in the manuscript was, Nick just comes off as too good a guy. Can't he do something? And I told him, and he's like, well, how can I be worse? What can I do to help?
That sounds like him. That's exactly what I would expect him to say. Well, how did he feel about, you know, you put some intimate details in this book. How did he feel?
I did. He knew what he was getting into when he married me. He knew that he was marrying a writer and a journalist who often used fodder from her own life in her work, in her art. And so he was my biggest fan and supporter from, again, like good Midwestern, nice man here from the very beginning. He probably read the book more than anyone else, maybe even including me. He offered incredible edits. And he also took the journey with me. So I visited about 20 countries on 5 continents. He was with me for a little bit more than half of them. And he's a journalist, too. He runs a website about business and sustainability called triplepundit.com. And so he would ask all the business questions. He would ask these very serious economic statistic questions about marriage, whereas I was asking the deeper, more emotional questions. And I think that it just led to creating a richer narrative that we got to do this together. And it was like marriage boot camp for the two of us during our first year of marriage to travel around the world and interview people about what marriage means around the globe.
Yeah, well, your first year is unlike 99.99999% of all first marriages, I'm pretty sure.
Probably. We did still watch a lot of Netflix. I'm totally caught up. I'm totally caught up on Game of Thrones, so we're good. We're good there.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you, it was interesting to read about each country and how they they viewed things. I learned quite a bit, too. I was quite interested in Kenya, but we can get to that. And there are already many people online with their own
Good.
Input here.
I'm so excited.
So we'll get to that in a minute. But the whole purpose of writing this book, it kind of evolved, didn't it, as you were writing it?
Yeah, it did. It did. When I announced my engagement on Facebook, as one does these days, it got more likes than when I'd published a book, when I got a job promotion, and I realized the world thought this was the most important thing I was ever going to do. And I was on the older side. I was 34 when I met Nick and when I got engaged. So I'd been fiercely independent my entire life, and I took care of myself. I paid for my own rent. I negotiated the price on my car. I wasn't sure how to join my life to another person's. I didn't know how to be a wife. I didn't know how to be a partner. But I was a travel editor for Yahoo at the time, and I had the great privilege of getting to travel around the world and interview other people about marriage, about being a wife, being a husband, and what that meant. And the initial book idea was just that. It was, mm-hmm. I'm going to travel around the world and find out what marriage means in different cultures in modern times, in the 21st century. But then I realized the real value in the book was being able to intertwine that reporting with our own personal story that newlyweds would get a sense of what the first year of marriage is actually like, the good parts, the amazing parts, but also the parts that are hard and scary.
I'm glad you did, because that really made the book in my mind, the combining of the two.
Yeah, I think it made it so much stronger. It could have come out just as a reported kind of self-help book, and I didn't want that. I wanted to tell a real story and have a real conversation about marriage. And a lot of things happened to us during our first year. I lost that dream job while we were climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. I got laid off via text message, which was fantastic. Yeah, and I got a kind of scary medical diagnosis. Both of my parents were sick, and I had to take care of them. And we struggled with getting our first home together. There were a lot of things that were really hard, even though the surface of the story is, oh my gosh, this couple gets to travel around the world. How fabulous is this? It goes a little bit deeper and darker into the things that I think every young couple experiences.
I think you're exactly right. Well, Judy in Sussex has something for us, so let's just go there. And Judy, great. Thank you for calling.
Certainly. Good morning to everyone. We were married in 1968, and someone told me that the hard part would be this. The bride marries the groom for who he will become, whereas the groom marries the bride for who she is right now. So you can see that going forward, neither of them are going to have exactly what they want. She will change, and he may or may not be what she envisions. I was able to keep that in mind, and I've been able to look back now on many marriages and see that awareness can be very helpful as you start your journey. That was my comment.
Oh, thank you for calling. Okay. Joe Piazza, what do you think?
Wow, it's so interesting, too, because you think about, you're like, where does the Venn diagram of those two things ever intersect, if it does at all? And it brings up this great point that I learned that I kept being told over and over again in different parts of the world, which is American women tend to have inflated expectations of who our husband is, who he should be to us, and what he will become in the future. And those expectations come from books, from media, from every romantic comedy ever created. And the idea that the person we marry should be our soulmate, our best friend, our therapist, our workout partner, should be our everything. And a lot of marriage experts and then real women around the globe said they think that's why American women are often dissatisfied with the very, very good marriage, the good man they do have, because they're constantly expecting him to change into the man they believe he could be. But then at the same time, you know, I feel like women are constantly growing, constantly evolving out of the person that the husband initially married. And marriage historians kept telling me that we're at a point, a really interesting point in American marriage, because this is the first generation that truly didn't need to get married. We're not necessarily financially dependent on men. We don't need them to protect us from someone coming and raping and pillaging in our village. And again, this is a uniquely American thing. We're in a very privileged position. But we can genuinely choose our spouse, and we happen to be much more, we're evolving constantly, we're changing constantly, both people are, but when that dynamic enters a marriage, I think it makes it harder because you could just walk away.
Yeah.
So you start to think, what's the point of being married to each other when I could do this on my own?
Yeah, and as you point, and as we learn in your book, nobody else has, no other country, people in other countries do not look at it the same way we do.
No, not at all. Not at all. One of the things that was so interesting to me is when I would ask people in other countries, when I was, like, my warm-up questions were, tell me how to be married. Everyone in America tells me marriage is so hard, but I don't know what that means. And they would just laugh. I mean, everyone from tribeswomen in Tanzania to some very fancy French women in a lingerie shop in Paris would just laugh at me. And they're like, oh my gosh, you Americans complain about marriage so much. You make it so much harder than it has to be. And you love to talk about how hard it is. And I keep that in mind. You know, when I try to be conscious of it when I'm like, oh, this is hard. And it's hard and it's work. But it's worth it, and it's worth putting in this effort, and I try to be very conscious of not complaining about my marriage.
Colette in Eagle River up next. Hi, Colette. Thank you for calling.
Oh, here I am.
Okay.
There you are.
I've been married for 20, well, I just was doing things while I was listening. I've been married for 37 years, and it has not been easy, and we've gone through lots of things, like, you know, autistic and disabled children. And I have two things that I'd like to say. The first thing is, I'm going to borrow from Garrison Keillor, who said, communication and honesty is overrated.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. I believe you.
Because
I've heard that over and over again.
You don't have to tell them. It may totally drive you nuts that he doesn't leave, that he leaves the toothpaste cap off. But I mean, if you tell them, I mean, what are you accomplishing? You have to feel how you would feel if you were told these things. You know, they just, I mean, you have to think, is it worth causing your spouse pain over some little thing that you could let go?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And that's the exact same advice that I got from these very fancy French women, who put it a different way because they're so French. They're like, they say, be your husband's mistress. And you're like, oh my gosh, I can't wear those fancy bras all the time. But that's not what they mean. They mean to think before you start nagging about things like that. Like, would the mistress be like, why don't you put the lid on the shampoo or the cap on the toothpaste or tuck the sheets in properly? And so it's to think about how you're making your partner feel when you're doing those kinds of things, and try to turn the mirror back on yourself. That's some of my favorite advice.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't know that Garrison Keillor had said that.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And the other advice is, people give up too soon, because you will fall in and out of your, after being married for, well, going on almost 38 years, you will fall you'll fall in and out of love of your husband. There will be times you just hate him. But it'll come around. You just have to keep holding on and keep working at it, because you'll fall. People give up too easily.
Yeah, yeah. I heard that so much too. And it was, what was remarkable was how similar a lot of the advice was once you finally got people talking. One of the problems was, here in the States, I couldn't get people to really talk to me about marriage right away. We don't tend to like to talk about the ickier parts of our marriage. We like to tell people, you know, we show all the nice things on social media. But everyone that I talked to told me marriage is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And it's also that you're going to have times when you aren't necessarily in love with each other anymore, and you have to wait it out. But I think, especially for my generation, again, I'm 36 now, so, and I love everyone calling in because I still need all of the advice, is that because we could walk away, a lot of people walk away. And I think it's a great reminder from people that have been married 20, 30, 40 years to say, no, you stick it out, because this relationship is one that's incredibly important to you, your future, and your children, if you choose to have them.
And the longer together, the more you become interdependent. All your memories and everything, you know, it's a greater and greater loss the longer you're together, because you're so intertwined. But I will hang up with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for calling. We're visiting today with Joe Piazza, award-winning journalist, and she is the author of How to Be Married, What I Learned from Real Women on Five Continents About Surviving My First Really Hard Year of Marriage. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network, talking about how to be married today with Joe Piazza. She's the author of the book, How to Be Married. It's a great book. I really enjoyed reading it, and I think you'd enjoy it as well, whether you're married or not, or divorced, or, you know, a lot of, what is it, half of us, Joe, in the States are at least divorced at one time?
Yeah, and the divorce rates around the world are relatively similar, at least in Western countries, that it fluctuates between 40% or 50% of people get divorced. The difference in the States tends to be that we really stigmatize divorce. We have this attitude that if a marriage ends in divorce or doesn't last 40 years, that it was a failure. And I think that's doing a real disservice to relationships that are very, very good, but people grow out of them. And very similar to what our first caller was saying, that, you know, people change in a marriage. And different countries tend to attach less of a stigma to divorce. And Denmark was really interesting for that, because they would often celebrate their divorce anniversary, where the new couple will get together with the old spouse, and everyone just kind of celebrates this great friendship and this great relationship that happened. And it's also much easier for them to get divorced. You can file most of the paperwork online. So that was a very, very interesting cultural difference, to look at how other cultures viewed the success of a marriage. They tended to view success based on happiness, whereas in the States we often view marital success based on longevity. And I know a lot of married couples who were married for a long, long time who were very unhappy in their marriages.
Yeah. The other part I liked about the Denmark chapter had to do with, how is it pronounced, hygge?
Hygge. You are one of the first people to say that right in an interview. We have had everyone say things from hygge to hygge. It's a funny word to say. It's very Danish. But yeah, it's hygge, like you're doing an enthusiastic clearing of your throat.
And tell our listeners what it means.
It's a way of life. It's a lifestyle in Denmark, and what it means is embracing the creation of a cozy and comfortable life. And that means creating a cozy and comfortable home together. It means eating dinner together, often by candlelight. The Danes buy those little tea candles from IKEA by the sackful. I've never seen anything like it. And a lot of, also what one of our callers said, it's not being prickly to your spouse, not bringing nagging and complaining into a home. And one of the best modern pieces of advice that the Danes gave me about hygge, about creating a comfortable, happy, cozy environment within your marriage, was to put away your phone. you go to Denmark and you see people at dinner and they're talking to each other, like actually speaking to one another instead of sitting on their phones or Instagramming their food or tweeting. And they just said, I think one of the worst things to happen to modern marriage is that we bring our screens into our bedrooms and to our dining room tables. And it's eroding marital communication, and it's not good. It's a bad thing. And they looked at me like I was a crazy person for always having my phone on the table. And it made me realize I don't need it. It's become this social crutch and prevents me from talking to my husband when we could be having a great conversation.
Lori in New Auburn has something for us. Hi, Lori. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I just wanted to give my best and worst advice. I've been married 31 years. I met my husband when I was 16 years old. My best advice, another caller already called on, and that was touched on, that you'll fall in and out of love. So my marriage was never, divorce was never an option. We knew we would be together, you know, from the moment we said we would until death. Like, divorce is not an option. And the worst advice that I ever got was not to go to bed angry.
Thank you. Yes, that is the worst advice I ever got, too.
Yeah, sometimes you need that space. And things just look better when you're not so tired.
You know what? You say exactly that in your book, Joe.
I do. That was among the only advice that I got. So I got engaged, and everyone wanted to give me advice about the wedding, first of all. It was, oh, my gosh, you have to use this caterer, or make sure that you have two bars, or make sure that your dress bustles this way. No one talked about the marriage. And when they did talk about the marriage, they said things like, don't go to bed angry. And I was like, but isn't everything better after a good night's sleep and a nice cup of coffee? Half the time I don't remember what we were fighting about anyway. So, yes, I'm so happy that you brought that up. But it's the standard advice that Americans like to give, and that was exactly what I wanted to move beyond as I was reporting this book and get to the real nitty-gritty stuff.
Oh, Lori, thank you so much for calling. I want to give Janet a chance from Burlington to join in. Janet.
Hi, this is Janet speaking.
Yes.
I kind of have a unique situation. I was a nice Jewish girl from Fairfield, Connecticut, who moved out to the Midwest and met a nice Catholic boy from the Midwest. I was a vegetarian. He was a hunter. So I would say the first thing that I had to learn was compromise. And the second thing has already been discussed, but I think it's a great saying. And my husband always is fond of saying, speaking without thinking is like shooting without aiming.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's the perfect metaphor. So much of the advice in the book is about being conscious and thinking before you act and thinking before you speak. But I love that story because my husband and I were also complete opposites. You know, I was this New York City girl. And a little bit of background, we were both journalists, and we met on a boat in the Galapagos Islands where we were on assignment, which sounds crazy, but true. It's what actually happened. And he was in San Francisco. I was in New York. He was this kind of, and he's from Milwaukee, but he was kind of this, you know, hippie guy with long hair who wore hiking sandals, and I had never met a pair of high heels that I didn't like, and I took taxis everywhere, and we're very, very different, and we had to learn compromise early on, and one of the biggest compromises was that I moved to San Francisco, which was a big change for me because my whole identity was wrapped up in being a journalist in New York City, and I had to figure out how to fit into his life, which was no easy feat, and I imagine the same was probably true for you after you got married.
Absolutely. You know, I had to learn to keep my Northeastern big mouth shut on occasion.
Thank you. Me too. Yeah.
and just be respectful of the fact that things are very different in the Midwest. People move at a slower pace. And sometimes you just have to kind of let it go.
Yeah, exactly. Keeping my Northeastern big mouth shut, I think, has been one of the bigger challenges for me in our marriage.
Oh, thank you so much, Janet, for calling. By the way, you can join in, too. Maybe you've got an experience to share or some advice to share. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org. Or go ahead and post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. You know what? Let's take another call. Clarence in Watertown, we'll go to you next.
Yes. Good morning. I got to shut the tractor off. I'm actually doing farm work here. Got out of the service and met the neighbor farmer's daughter, got married. The first year was not the hardest to adapt to. It's after the children come along, and my wife had a heck of a problem with PMS.
Mm.
And it took me years, took me years to realize what the X's on the calendar were for. And so then I just made up, you know, okay, now I got to mind every all my P's and Q's, you know, when that's approaching.
Yeah.
And you realize this is what it is, and you just kind of live with it and make allowances for it, because in a day or two or half a day, it's all going to blow over and everything will be fine. And
95% of marriage is preparation, just knowing when those exes are coming.
That's you better believe it. And also, I was going to, you talked about the last caller had said, you know, think before you open your mouth. And you may say something in, you know, you're angry and you say something and then, oh, I'm sorry, I take it back. You can take it back, but your partner knows that you said it. And that's what you were thinking.
Yeah.
And so along that same vein, I would say, yeah, think before you speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. You can't, because you think you can take it back or just say, oh, I'm sorry. But I'm sorry doesn't erase that it still lives in your partner's mind. I'm really happy you brought up kids, too. And one of the major reasons that I wrote this book and I wanted to report it, I figure things out very well by reporting them and then writing them. So this was very cathartic for me. It was like therapy in some ways. But we knew that we wanted to have kids, and we wanted to have them relatively quickly. I was 35 when we got married, so it was time. But I wanted our marriage to be in a good place before we did that. It was incredibly important to me to be in a good place. But everywhere that I went and every culture I talked to said everything is going to completely change once you have kids. And now I'm 8 months pregnant. So it's been interesting to hear different people's views on how to make a marriage, keep a marriage on track once you completely disrupt it. People like to talk about introducing kids into a marriage with the same words they use to talk about armed combat. You know, you're throwing a grenade into your marriage, you're blowing everything up, and our goal was to get to a very comfortable place with each other and be happy before we decided to blow everything up, which is about to happen in about 6 weeks.
About 6 weeks. Oh, man. Clarence, thank you. Yes.
Okay, I kept spare chocolate on hand in case I needed it.
Nick is very good about keeping the chocolate on hand. Chocolate and snacks, generally. I mean, I get cranky when I'm hungry, and I'll just look at him, and he's like, it's chocolate time. And I think that is the mark of a good husband.
Thank you, Clarence. Thanks for pulling the tractor over. I really appreciate your comments. Thanks so much. Oh, man. Marion in Marshfield, it's your turn. Hi, Marion.
Hi. I found that do not criticize was a very important thought. You can think first before you say anything, and you can change things and get to the point you want to without criticizing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that goes along with the, you know, criticizing, nagging, complaining. I think that we need to be a little bit more gentle with our marriage. I hear a lot of my friends, they're meaner to their spouses than they are to their worst enemies. And I didn't want to get to that point. It was one of the reasons that I wanted to work on this so early on, was to be conscious of that, because I think that you can take a softer tack and not insult your spouse and not say things that will be hurtful just by thinking before you speak. And again, this is advice that I heard over and over again in every single culture around the world. And from women who didn't speak English, who didn't have running water, particularly the women in tribes in India along the Brahmaputra River, they also said to be grateful for your spouse, to recognize every day that they are this incredible force in your life and a force of good, even when things are hard, and to just say thank you, and that saying thank you can replace a lot of the negative energy that often comes up in a marriage, reminding them why you chose them in the first place.
Yeah, that's such good advice. Thank you, Marion. We have, and by the way, you got advice from men as well. What was the guy's name? Bobby Klein, was it?
Bobby Klein, the most interesting man in the world.
$300 an hour, if I'm not mistaken.
$300 an hour. I know. Bobby runs a marriage therapy spiritual guru practice in the jungles of the Yucatan Peninsula. And he used to own a restaurant in Hollywood with Jack Nicholson, of all people, not necessarily the paragon of happy marriages, Jack, but he's got some great Jack stories. And he was a rock and roll photographer for the Doors, and now he's this incredible spiritual guru and marriage counselor. And people travel from all over the world to talk to him about communication and marriage and saving their marriage and also starting out a marriage on the right foot. And we found him on our honeymoon. And Bobby kind of looks like a Grateful Dead roadie. And quotes Pablo Neruda from memory. I mean, he really is the most interesting man in the world. And he told us this advice that stuck with us, that he said when couples first come to him, when they first get married, they're like, oh, my gosh, look at us. We're one now. And he just looked us in the eyes and said, that's impossible. You're not one. You need to stay true to yourself. You need to stay independent people in order to make this marriage work, in order to, you know, both feel strong and comfortable in your identities and also to keep your marriage interesting. If you fall into the trap of thinking you're one, then what else do you have? And that's when a marriage can become stale and mundane and boring. And I agree with him. It's something that we think about a lot. And I'm so happy that we got to meet him.
Yeah, interesting. Marianne, thank you again. I want to give Stella in Sturgeon Bay a chance to join us. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I would love to give you a wonderful piece of advice that my mother-in-law gave me shortly after my husband and I were married 36 years ago. She said, you will always love him, but you won't always like him very much. It has proved to be very, very valuable, because when I experience frustration or we've been arguing, it helps to interject some humor into the situation, and it also helps to express feelings in a non-threatening way. When I say, I love you, but I don't like you right now.
it's such good advice, and I got advice like that from some of my great aunts as well, and it let me keep things in perspective when we were arguing. I'm like, it made me feel better, because I think that there's so much guilt wrapped up, especially for women in a marriage, that I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm failing at this. I'm not doing this right. But to remember, oh, no, I do love you, but I don't like you at all, and that's okay. It's a really nice thing to remember.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling, Stella. And Jane in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What have you got for us today?
This connects perfectly with the last little bit about humor, which we use a lot in our marriage. We've been married for over 30 years. And when I get cranky with him about one of his idiosyncrasies, or if I'm having an I don't like you moment, I remind myself that he's the only person that has lived with me this long voluntarily.
That's true.
I never said I was a peach either.
No.
I'm sure he gets just as cranky with me. And so I remember that, and then that kind of is like, okay, I don't have a right to complain.
What are some of his idiosyncrasies? Can you tell us?
Oh. He, a little bit OCD, and he's always rearranging things, and then I never know where anything is.
I know. I have the same problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a nice reminder to remember that we're human, too, and there's things. Mm-hmm. There are things that I do that drive Nick so insane, namely the fact that I think that my dog that I brought to the marriage, my big, gross Labrador mix, I think, Nick, it was easier for my husband to get a wife than it was for him to get this dog into his house. But I think she should sleep in the bed. And I believe all dogs should sleep in the bed, and he does not think that is the case. And it was a big compromise, but it's also something for me to remember, you know, when I get annoyed at the little things that he does, that there's things that I do that drive him insane, and that's a marriage. This person chose to voluntarily live with me, hopefully for longer than anyone else ever has, and that's a lot of work. That was the biggest things about our first year of marriage. Among the real-life difficult challenges, but it was learning to live with another person all of the time. And we didn't live together until about a week before we got married. That's when I finally moved into his place, and then we got our place together 3 months after we got married. But we were kind of old-fashioned, which I liked, that we chose to move in together right before we got married instead of living together beforehand and figuring it out that way. But figuring out how to live with one person all the time is tricky, and it takes work. It's hard work.
Thank you so much for that call. And Michael emailed to ask, and I don't think you've got, have you got, no, you don't have 7 years in your marriage yet, but you, what have you learned about whether or not there's any truth to the seven-year itch theory?
I don't know. I'm fascinated by the seven-year itch theory because I've seen it. And so a lot with a lot of my friends. And it comes up a little bit in the book. A lot of my friends got married. There was a wave of marriages at age 26, 27. And a lot of them started getting divorced right around 34, 35. And it's also a uniquely American thing. They don't, if you bring up the seven-year itch in other countries and they just look at you like, what is this thing? Who would put an expiration date on a marriage like that? And it's another facet of the fact that we tend to view marriages so negatively here in the States. And we use words like seven-year itch. When people are getting married, we say, oh, the old ball and chain, or he's getting tied down. And so we're not using the kind of language to talk about longevity and happiness in a marriage. We talk about language that's very, very negative. And I don't know what's going to happen. A lot of the interviews that I've been doing, people are like, check in with me in 7 years. And I'm like, I will. And I will, happily. And some of the interviews, they're like marriage expert Joe Piazza. And part of the reason I wrote this book is because I'm not an expert. Because I'm just a woman trying to figure it out, and I want other people to talk to me about it, and I want to hear all of this advice. And I'm hoping that through my journey, other newlyweds and also people who have been married and divorced can benefit from having all of this advice in one place.
Yeah. Are you still using those napkin rings?
Oh, my gosh, we use those napkin rings at least three nights a week. So my husband, this is another point of compromise and evolution in a marriage, grew up having dinner at the dinner table with his family every single night. I didn't grow up like that. I grew up kind of balancing a TV dinner on my lap with my mother. My dad was never around when we had dinner at night. And so he really wanted us to have lovely napkin rings and a lovely dining room table. And that was part of our quest in Denmark to get the hygge, to get the cozy things that make a family dinner feel really special. So we not only got napkin rings, but we also have beautiful candlestick holders given to me by my incredible mother-in-law, Patsy.
Will we be seeing any follow-up marriage books?
I don't know. People keep asking me right now if I'm going to write How to Be Pregnant. And it's interesting because I went back. I'm still in touch with most of the sources. I interviewed hundreds of women and men for this book, and I'm still in touch with a lot of them. And when I got pregnant, I started asking them for a lot of advice, and they gave me some great pregnancy advice, and I started trying to write that book, and at the end of it, I was like, I feel like this is almost too personal. Writing about my marriage was fine, but writing about my pregnancy is a lot. But I do think that a follow-up book in 5 years, or even just a follow-up article, it doesn't have to be a full book, would be really interesting.
Yeah, I think it would be, too. You're a great writer, Joel, and it's been a lot of fun talking with you, and I really enjoyed your book. Thank you so much for being with us today. I very much appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Larry, and I'm excited. We're coming to Milwaukee at the end of the week. We're going to be at Boswell's Bookstore on Friday night.
Oh, you are?
So we are.
What day? What day are you going to be there?
Friday night. I think around 6:30. It was all organized by my wonderful mother-in-law. So we're hoping for a really great discussion there in Milwaukee.
Boswell Books, Friday night.
6:30? Around, I think 6:30 or 7 o'clock, but I think people are getting there at 6:30.
Joe, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, guys. Fun.
It was a lot of fun. Joe Piazza is the author of How to Be Married, What I Learned from Real Women on Five Continents About Surviving My First Really Hard Year of Marriage. It was published, her book's published by Harmony Books. And there's we hardly got into the book itself, but I'm telling you, it's funny in parts, it's sad in parts, but mostly funny and pretty interesting. And she does end her last chapter in Scotland with the seven, eight overall points that she got about how to be married. Joe Piazza. Well, a couple of guys coming up next. We're not going to talk about marriage with them. Instead, we're going to kick into weather. John Martin, Steve Ackerman joining us next. Our weather guys here on the Ideas Network.